As we think about God, one of the things that you just have to notice about the way God is described in biblical information is that there is a wrath associated with God. In fact, I believe it's over 200 times the wrath of God is described in one way or another in biblical information. Leo Tolstoy, who wrote War and Peace, was classically trained to be a priest, rejected that background, became a philosopher, and later in his life returned to that knowledge about God. But he described, and in fact, it's suggested that he wrote War and Peace, that he described God as a God of vengeance and wrath in the Old Testament and a God of peace and love in the New Testament. I don't think that that's an accurate description of the biblical information. But tonight we're going to look at the biblical information, and I'll give you some things that I find helpful as I think about the wrath of God and what it accomplishes. So one of the statements that is made in the material that you have been reading is that in essence, God's wrath is not different from his holiness. It is simply that into which holiness is transformed when it's confronted by sin. Does that make sense to you? What do you see there? What does that cause you to think about?
It's not possible for God to sin. And so there's no way that he's like a magnet. He repels sin. And in order to make sure that he names sin, it always is rejected by him. It's always repelled. So that turns.
That's interesting. Kind of like two magnets.
Yeah.
You can't put two north ends of magnets together. They just, if you try to push them together, they'll offset.
And since God is going to be stronger than sin, the sin is going to feel the wrath or the weakness.
Okay. Other thoughts? Yeah, Kim?
This statement almost makes me think that there's a contrast between wrath and his holiness, that they're opposites. And I don't see that because I think that his holiness is righteous. And I've often struggled with thinking about God's wrath, especially when someone might challenge me and say, well, God is a God of vengeance. And if he was a good God, if he was a loving God, he wouldn't punish people. And so I look at this as if the wrath of God, and it isn't different from his holiness, but I wonder about this holiness transforming when confronted by sin, only because I think that holiness includes wrath, because God is a righteous judge. And if he didn't demonstrate his anger towards sin or his anger toward us, that would not make him a loving God. It's kind of like when you're raising your children, and if you have to punish your children, you might be angry with their disobedience. And hopefully you don't act out on anger, hopefully, but you can be angry with them. But you still love them. And you're hopefully a righteous judge. Hopefully you have judged rightly. He always judges rightly, different than we are. But I don't know. I'm kind of struggling with that statement just a little bit. Anyway, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Bill.
God's holiness follows a straight course. It doesn't deviate left or right. But the farther you get on the wrong side, the worse the punishment's going to be. If you're good and you stay in the center or on the other side, you'll get the same rewards as everybody else. But we see, for those that go off course, we see God's justice as wrath. And it can be worse, like the destruction of the nations and going into captivity. But the worst punishment of all is being separated from God for eternity.
Okay.
You can come back from the wrong side, but once you're dead, you can't change.
Okay. Ted?
I think wrath is also a point of view. To use an example, the wrath of our justice system being employed upon a person who breaks the law willingly and does that. For instance, the person that speeds by you and gets caught by the police. That's the wrath of the law coming upon that person. And you say, because you're doing speed limit or below it, you're not breaking the law. So from your point of view, that's justice. From that person's point of view, that's wrath. And so when we see God displaying his wrath upon people, those who are righteous may not see it as wrath, but see it as justice. Because that's what they see. They are conformed to God's righteousness, to God's will. And when they see God employing justice on somebody who is not in line with God, then to the person that it's happening to, it is wrath. But to us, it's justice.
Okay. So I think good point. It does depend on our perspective, how we're seeing this. As you go through the material that you had tonight, the writer invites us to consider a couple of questions. To what is God's wrath a response? In other words, a lot of people would suggest that God is angry with sin, but never with the sinner. That there's a difference in approach here. Yeah.
It seems to me, looking back at the Old Testament, that God's wrath was always triggered by disobedience. Many times that the Israelites fell away and worshiped other gods and idols and so forth.
Okay.
God's wrath to him. And personally, I don't like the idea or like to think of the idea that God's holiness transforms. God is holy as far as I'm concerned, and wrath is a different department. He's always holy, whether he's being wrathful or
okay. Whatever. That's an interesting concept, that wrath is separate from holiness. And what the author has suggested is that wrath may be a part of holiness, or somehow
it may be a result of.
A result of holiness. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Bill?
We, as believers, and can be a very faithful person and still do things wrong. That's bad behavior. We might not intend it, but it happens that way. If we keep that up, it can bring God's wrath. But I've seen it over and over and over in the scriptures. It's the attitude of our heart. That's the person. We can do all the perfect behaviors, like a devout Catholic or devout Jew, and still our heart is not in the right place, and we're not going to be forgiven.
Okay. So I hear you suggesting that wrath, though it's most of the time directed at behavior, it can be directed at the thoughts of the heart, which tends to be associated more with the person than the behavior. That's interesting because, and we do have to admit that bad behavior never comes out of a good heart, and good behavior doesn't come out of a bad heart. Now, it may periodically happen that good behavior comes out of a bad heart or bad behavior comes out of a good heart, but it won't be consistently that way. So, yeah, it's a good point. Just hang on to this idea of God being angry at persons and being angry at behavior, because we're going to get to kind of the way that I resolve some of this, and it's just me. It's a philosophy that I have, but it makes it possible for me, in my mind, to bring all of these things together that we're talking about. So let's hang on to that. And there is good indication that sometimes God's wrath is directed at individuals. There's no question about that. So how does God reveal his wrath? And I think about three different classes of people. I think about believers. I think about unbelievers, those who have chosen to reject God. And I think about those who don't know anything about God. They've not chosen to reject him, but they're not believers. I call them the God ignorant. Okay. So what do you see as the differences in the way that God reveals his wrath? In Romans, the first chapter, especially the end of the chapter, God's wrath is revealed from God against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. So I think Romans, the first chapter, is a discussion about God's wrath as it relates to believers who beat down the truth. It could be that he's talking about unbelievers who have seen enough evidence to know that there's a God. He says they're willingly ignorant. They beat down the truth, or they hold the truth in unrighteousness. I think there's a difference in a person who is a believer who chooses to reject God and a person who is an unbeliever who continues in his rejection of God, and a person who is ignorant of God. What do you see in those three different categories? Or do you see God's wrath revealed differently to those people at all? Any thoughts from folks on Zoom? Yeah, Carol.
Well, to the believers, he gives his holy writing, his scriptures. So they know what the wrath, like the little kid who knows he's not supposed to take the cookie, but takes the cookie anyway. He knows what the wrath is. He knows what's coming. To the unbeliever, I guess they must know something because they're different than God ignorant. So they must know something, but they don't believe in God. So they wouldn't believe the warning or the caution that, especially like when King David was talking to his sons in the scriptures. And to the God ignorant, I'm guessing because God is a God of order, there, the universe is in an orderly sense. And so to be ignorant of God is to be ignore the order that the world is in, like the free climber who climbed all those mountains and just up and down like a little mountain goat with no secure rope to do anything. And he did it for, I don't know, about 8 years before he fell to his death. Okay, his wrath is delivered because he's ignorant of the order of God. So that's the only way I can rationalize, because that's his punishment. That's the wrath. And that's what basically it is a punishment. So his ignorance of God in the order of God is, he still is going to be punished when he falls.
Yeah, as I read Romans, the first chapter, that no one has an excuse for being ignorant of God in Romans 1, because God has revealed his hidden things, his eternal power and Godhead in the things that are made. So I can see that there is a sense in which no one is exempt from the wrath of God. And then I read a statement like the Apostle Paul, or if he's the one who wrote Hebrews, like Hebrews says, they're like a dog returning to their own vomit again. They were washed, and they're the sow that returns to its wallowing in the mire. It's as if they don't want to know God. And you bring up an interesting point I was thinking about as I was going through this. Is gravity a punishment? Because gravity is what makes you fall. If that's what makes you fall off the mountain, is it a punishment?
No.
Or is gravity what kept you on the mountain in the first place? It's just learning to deal with gravity. It's
the lack of respect of gravity.
Okay. Could be. Interesting concept that falling to your death is not the punishment of God. It's the operation of gravity. And it was gravity that made it possible for you to just not fly away from the earth. That's an interesting concept. And then, go ahead, Bill. I didn't mean to ignore you.
Gravity, in the case of falling off a mountain, it's just there. It's your own self-punishment for not having the wisdom to use a rope or use some protection to keep you attached. It's a lack of wisdom. And is that a punishment? Wisdom is something we're supposed to strive for. It's not something we're necessarily blessed with when we're born.
Yeah, so I don't know that what happens as a result of God's order is necessarily punishment, Jill.
No, but if they ignore God, and God is the sense of order, he is the creator. He is the one who created the snake, and these religions who have the snake handlers who ignore the fact that that snake could kill them. They are ignoring God's order.
Okay.
And that's why I say they're God ignorant, because they're so sure of themselves and what they're doing, that the order of God and what they should respect naturally, they don't.
That's stupid.
Okay. I think in many cases, yeah, John, did you have your hand up?
To me, it seems like God's triggered to wrath from sin, not the individual, no matter what the state.
Okay. Nolan, did you have your hand up and I ignored you? I didn't mean to. Or were you just stretching?
Rest on the baby.
Okay. And I think it was Bill that mentioned that there is a way to be delivered from wrath. And of course, that's why we're all here. We want to be delivered from wrath. We don't want to face wrath. And so the deliverance from wrath is complete. There is no question about it. It's not as if you have to suffer a little bit of wrath. You're delivered from wrath. So I think that's part of the ongoing discussion in Romans 6, 7, and 8. There is therefore now no condemnation to those that are in Christ Jesus. It's not as if you're going to suffer a little. You're not going to suffer the wrath of God. So deliverance from wrath is a critical importance. And I want to think about for a minute the wrath of God as punishment. Now we think of the wrath of God as punishment oftentimes. And I spent a lot of time dealing with trying to understand punishment and the what good punishment does. I'm a behaviorist, okay? I make no bones about that. That's my philosophical approach to understanding human behavior. I'm a behaviorist. And you'll see that in just a minute. There's a difference between punishment and the consequence of bad behavior. Okay? And that's kind of like gravity. Gravity is not a punishment. Gravity is just the falling because of gravity is just it's a consequence of a bad behavior. And it can't be escaped. It's always going to be there. Punishment, though, is something that is intended to stop bad behaviors. It's not intended to teach new behaviors. Punishment is intended to stop dangerous or bad behavior. Okay? Bill, comment?
Yeah, and as far as punishment, in Proverbs it's mentioned more than once, spare the rod, spoil the child. If you apply the rod, it's not going to kill him, but it will save his soul. So it is to teach godly behavior.
It doesn't teach the behavior. It stops the bad behavior. That's different than teaching good behavior. It stops bad behavior that will issue in consequences. But it doesn't teach you what to do. Okay? Just imagine that I have a behavior that I want you to do. But I don't tell you what that behavior is. I just beat you every time you don't do that behavior. Well, eventually you might accidentally stumble on what the behavior was that I wanted, and I didn't beat you. But punishment is not intended to teach good behavior. Now, let me develop this a little bit more completely. This inner box that you see here that has four cells in it, okay? There's reinforcement on one side, there's punishment on the other side. There's positive reinforcement, there's negative reinforcement. There's positive punishment, and there's negative punishment. Okay? Most of us do what we do in order to get something into our environment that we want, or to get something out of our environment that we don't want. Okay? Reinforcement always increases behavior. Punishment always decreases behavior. So let's think about the difference between positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. Remember, it's reinforcement, so it's increasing behavior. Okay? Positive reinforcement. You do something and I give you a sucker. That's positive reinforcement. The probability that you'll do it again is increased because you want to get the sucker. Okay, right? Makes sense? That one we're familiar with. We get that box, generally speaking, correct. Negative reinforcement is not punishment. Negative reinforcement is increasing the behavior by taking something away that you didn't want in your environment. Okay? Yeah, Bill?
There's an example in the scriptures and more than one place where referring to us and using silver or gold as an example, you put it in the fire and then you get a product out of the fire, which is punishment, that's fit for the refiner.
Okay.
So that would be an extreme punishment to become better.
Hang on to that for a minute. Because eventually we'll talk about consequences of behavior. Consequences of behavior don't have anything to do with teaching new behavior. That's getting to the end and saying your behavior has been such that this now happens. Okay? That's different than teaching behaviors. What we're talking about now is while you're alive, I'm trying to get you to be more like what I want you to be. I can do that by giving you positive reinforcement, or I can take away things that you find unpleasant. Okay? That's negative reinforcement. I'm increasing the behavior, I'm giving you something, or in the case of positive reinforcement, I'm giving you something that you want. In the case of negative reinforcement, I'm taking away something you don't want. Okay, Cheryl?
Go back to thinking about when Jericho was... When God said everything in Jericho was Corban for God. And the wrath of God came down on the man who took all of the things and his whole family. And they disappeared from the earth. Now, I don't see any positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement for the rest of the people. But the rest of the people understood that when God said something, you better listen.
Right, but what was happening there was a consequence. And now you're talking about vicarious learning. So I learn by what happens to you, okay? That's true. But what happened to those who sinned at Jericho, they were eventually destroyed. Okay. We're not talking about teaching them to not do this. They did it. This was the consequence. That was the end.
But that teaches the rest of the
people. It teaches the rest of the people because it's negative reinforcement. You don't want that in your life. So I'll take that away if you admit this behavior. If you're godly, I'll take the punishment away.
Okay. So the positive reinforcement is when you're with God. God gives you blessings. So every time
That's right.
Every time the people were with God, they had blessings, they had crops, they had everything. And then when they would go away from God, then there were punishments to the nations and people came.
There were punishments, but it wasn't negative reinforcement. Negative reinforcement is God sending the people back from Babylonian captivity. You don't want to be in captivity. I'll take that away if you will live the way that I want you to live. Okay? That's teaching them how to live. And it's forward looking. I want you to be this kind of person. So I will bless you and I will take away your enemies. Those are two different things. One is positive reinforcement. One is negative reinforcement. Now let's talk about punishment. Punishment is always intended to decrease behavior. It's not intended to teach new behavior. If my child runs out in the street, that's dangerous behavior. I have to get that to stop. And so I spank them. Okay, that's positive punishment. I'm adding something to their environment that they don't want. Negative punishment is when you get grounded. Okay, I take something out of your environment that you want to decrease the behavior. You see the difference? And we have a hard time keeping those straight sometimes. Just the easy way to do it is reinforcement always increases behavior. Punishment always decreases behavior. Okay? Now that's it. Yeah, Kim.
Well, it reminded me of the end of Malachi. When Malachi is talking to the people through the oracle of God. And at the very end, he says, "See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes." So I'm going to give you a lesson to teach you, and it's going to be positive. He said, "He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Or else I will come and strike the land with a curse." So that would be the consequence if they don't turn their hearts. But he's saying, I'm going to give you that positive reinforcement. I'm going to send somebody to you who's going to encourage you, to teach you, who's going to help turn your heart. But if you refuse, then we're going to have the punishment.
Right.
And so I thought that was a really clear example in just a couple of verses of the difference in positive reinforcement and then the punishment.
Yeah. I just see this over and over again. And that's because this is my philosophy of behavior. You reinforce behavior, you increase it. You want to decrease behavior, you punish it. Punish it. By punishing bad behavior, you don't tell people what you want. But God does that for us. He tells us what he wants and he promises to reinforce it. Okay? So it stops bad behavior or it teaches good behavior. Now, there is a sense in which punishment and reward or punishment and reinforcement are not related to ongoing behavior. At the final judgment, we're not talking about what God does to increase my behavior or decrease my behavior. It's the consequence of what has already happened. And we describe that as reward and punishment, but it's functioning very differently. Now it's a consequence. It's what we have laid up for ourselves. And it will happen. Okay? So, why do I find this so helpful in trying to understand things? you know, people talk about jailing those who have committed crimes. That's punishment. And they say, punishing people doesn't teach them how to behave. You're right. Okay. You're right. It's only intended to stop bad behavior. Okay? Doesn't teach people what new behavior that you want is or what it looks like. So it doesn't bother me that jailing people doesn't teach new behavior. It's punishment, clearly, but it's consequence. Okay? In a sense, it's like consequence at the end of time. You're not interested in the learning process. At that point, you're interested in the consequence of what behavior was. And I find it very helpful in my thinking about all of these things to sort of divide it this way. Yeah, Bill, you had a comment.
Yeah, just a question. Our definition of hate and the Bible definition of hate is different. Is our perspective of wrath different than the biblical meaning of wrath?
See, I don't think it is. I think our perspective of wrath is punishment. I see it in my mind, it fits perfectly into my framework.
Well, okay. But to me, wrath is not just an action, it's an attitude towards the act that makes the act. Like if I say, I hate somebody, I want nothing good for them. And with God, it just means to love less. And wrath to us means you go berserk. That's not God. It's more of a, I see it as an attitude, not just an action. And I don't see God as having that uncontrolled hate towards anything.
I don't see that definition of wrath. I don't think that it's hatred. I don't think, and not the way we use it. I equate it more with anger. So it is that feeling of anger, but God is angry with us. That doesn't mean he hates us. And he demonstrates his wrath upon the people. And when you read those verses in Psalms that we looked at, he's angry with the people who are rebelling against him. And so he's angry. It doesn't mean he's hating, and it's not meaning he's going berserk or anything like that. I don't think of wrath that way. If I have wrath, it's anger. It's not hatred. At least that's not the way I understand the word.
I think I'm tending more to your definition. I think wrath is punishment, is behavior. Okay. Well, for what it's worth, that's how I put these things together. That's how I come to some kind of an understanding that works for me, and it lets me kind of understand all of the different information that I have about God's wrath. So that's just my approach. And it's something you can take or leave it. It's Dean's way of building a framework for all of this stuff. Okay. Before we get away, we want to give you an opportunity to respond to God, if you wish. Yeah, Mandy?
Sorry, I have this thing that's just sticking in my brain, and I've got to get it out there. The nature of God is love.
Okay.
And the nature of corrective behavior is out of a basis of love. God does not have the capacity to hate his creation. He has the capacity to punish, to be angry, to correct, to teach. He does not have the capacity, based on the nature of who God is, to exact hatred. He has the nature and the ability to exact a wrath, but that wrath is a response and an anger based upon our behavior.
Okay.
Right? And his goal in everything that we see across time is the idea to teach and to bring to him. If we are so sinful in our nature that we bring upon his wrath, we bring upon our own consequence.
Okay. You're right. God is so loving that he delays the time when the consequences must be faced. That's First Peter. You know, God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And because he delays judgment, some people think that God can't judge, that there will never be consequence. There will be. He just doesn't want it. He desperately wants us to learn the behaviors that bring reward in consequence. He does not want to have to put a person into hell. But if a person so desires to be there, he will let that happen.
Well, I think the struggle that people have in all of this is trying to reckon. We will say God is love, God is love, God is love. How do we define God is love? The worldly version of love is I would never do anything to you that hurts you. However, how we define love and how God defines love. So at the base of Mount Sinai, the earth was open. People were swallowed and destroyed instantly.
Consequence of bad behavior.
Consequence of bad behavior. So we have to couple the two. God is love. He would never do anything. He would never hate. Well, people would say, well, you killed 3,000 people. That's hate. No, that's consequences.
Sure. Right.
But we also forget the part where we're the clay. We're a creation. And the potter has the choice, the power, if you will, to destroy that creation, to start fresh. And so we have to build all those layers for us to understand. And then we have to remove our worldly. Like for me, if you harmed one of my children, you would see wrath. And I know that that's not the right attitude. But you would see Bill's definition of wrath, not God's definition of wrath or punishment. And my wrath would be 100% wrong. So we try to kind of marry our own human feelings to this, but God has that power over us to do with us what he chooses. Every one of us has sinned. Every one of us has fallen short. We've missed the mark. And if God chose today to strike the occupants of this building dead, then he's within his rights to do that. So it's one of those things. I've had this discussion with lots of people. Well, God is love. He would never do that. Well, he did do that. He destroyed entire nations. Wiped them out. Why? So we could be here today. So, you know, it's a difficult thing, I think, for people to... And I just tried to stay quiet during the morning. I wanted to see where you were going with it, which... was where I would go with it. I'm just not smart enough to present it that way. But, you know, it's sometimes we have to kind of look at the whole and listen to what's being said. But really, it's just kind of our getting convoluted with our own thinking and forgetting God created us. If he wants to stuff us out, he can. So.
Yeah. Okay, Carol, you get the last word.
With God... when you think about the way the world thinks about, well, God is love, well, they sort of say, well, you've got a little child here, and I'm never going to do anything to make that little child uncomfortable. And when the little child keeps trying to run around and chase the ball and keeps going out towards the thing, and other people are all worried about the child being killed. Oh, no, I love my child. I would never stop my child from doing anything. So the idea that love is not setting any limits or showing anything is what the world is wanting to say God is supposed to do. But when that child gets killed in the street, that parent doesn't feel very much like they loved the child.
Yeah.
And so their premise of God is love is where the flaw is. They're not looking at it from any of the other senses that we have of order in our lives.
Well, that's true. That's true. Ted's going to lead us in a song. If there's anything we can do to help you, if you need to return to God, we want to pray with you. Just let us know. That's what we want to think about as we stand and sing this song together.